Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR's College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio. Wildwood Park One Day Outdoor Music Festival. What that says is what it is. Mr. Morpheus One Man Band, Hartley Family Bluegrass, Ukulele Bill, and many more. Headlined by Betty Sue from Austin and Canadian Doug Cox from Vancouver, British Columbia. Hayrides, food, entertainment, special programs for children, with acoustic music alive all round the park. I was able to talk with Betty Sue, who, born and brought up in Texas, looked set for a traditional life of college degrees and then what, until at 26 she put them all aside, started writing songs and singing them, and bringing them to the world. Where did that start, I wondered, and was it like a dam bursting?
A little bit. I grew up in a very musical family, and I don't think I ever realized that it was something that I wanted to do professionally. So it wasn't like I had felt denied consciously. I just had never really, because it wasn't something that was illegitimate for other people to pursue. It just wasn't something that I thought I was supposed to pursue. And it was kind of a watershed moment when I suddenly realized that I had had that attitude, because it was so buried in the subconscious, these kinds of permissions that we give ourselves to pursue risky things. We don't even know that we're denying ourselves permission. And I think that was true for myself. And I think there are a lot of artists or musicians who, whether it's truthful or not, say, oh, well, this is the only thing that I can do. And that was never my story. So it never seemed like, oh, well, for lack of anything else that I can do with my life, I guess I will do this. So it really seemed like a luxury to suddenly have that permission and to think, I can do this, and not because it's the only thing I can do, but because it's what I want to do.
Well, you have such interesting titles. I confess I haven't heard much of your music, but the words that you use, the music you compose as you made the lyrics first, I don't know, some composers start, when they're composing songs particularly, start with the words and the words generate their own music. Others, the two come together and it's the memories or the family things that you're writing about, the special emotionally connected memories. How would you describe your way of creating the pieces? Does the idea come first?
It's always different for me. There are some songs that everything comes simultaneously and it comes quickly. But I think I have just as many songs that start with a musical idea as start with maybe a thematic idea in terms of story or words. I just hope every day that I have an idea and have a good idea. And I don't really have a preference that starts with music or a feeling or words or a story idea, just so long as it's a good idea that can be expanded upon. Mm-hmm.
What about the instrumentation, the harmonies that you put into the songs with you? Are you the one who composes the background, the chords, the way the music fits the words? Or did you have to go back to school to figure out what exactly would be right for this particular song?
For me, it's a lot of trial and error. I do write the harmony parts and I arrange the prosody myself. But I do have players who play with me who I give a lot of freedom to play, say if a guitar player is taking a solo or if a keyboard player is taking a solo, I want them to have freedom as long as it fits the song. I don't instruct them with every Well, occasionally I do, but usually I don't instruct them as to every note that they should play. I want them, especially at the live shows, to have a lot of freedom, because to me that's part of the magic of a live show is having a kind of jazz sensibility where you don't know what's going to happen, and every musician on stage, myself included, is pushed to take a little bit of risk, because that's where the payoffs come musically.
So it has a lot in common with the sort of thing that I hear from jazz players and jazz musicians, that they have that same sudden need to fly off on their own, and the rest of the ensemble goes with it because they're all in tune together and can see where it fits and why it fits. And it also must have something historically with this sort of music, that it has a freedom to express itself, even though you're going from a written text or music. There are moments when just the very fact that you're in a certain place and a certain day and a certain time, that you want to add or do something a little different.
I agree absolutely that there is kind of a historical precedent for both keeping forms. You know, I think about all the thousands of years of human music that didn't have any way of recording, and that the way the songs were preserved was by people being true to the song and handing it down just exactly so. And so I do believe in some of that preservation, but I think now that we have the ability to record, there's even more freedom to not stick to those forms and to create a different musical experience at every performance. And I think the audience, most of them, I think, appreciate that risk-taking. And the musicians have a much more fun time. And I think when the musicians on stage have more fun, then the audience is going to have more fun, too.
Why not?
Yeah.
But your instrument, what you play mostly, is a guitar?
Correct.
And it's a steel string?
It is.
Yeah. Now, the instruments that you put into the harmonies, do you have particular preferences to go with those guitar chords that you've got? Or do you just suddenly have a thought, well, I'd like to have a clarinet in here, or a violin, or a fiddle, or some jazzy, more of a saxophone sound? Do you give yourself that freedom in this same idiom of, what do you call yourself, folk music?
I do. I really enjoy the textures of so many different instruments. You know, I've recorded with big electric bands. I've recorded very acoustically. The records that I made with Doug are extremely bare. You know, they're just Doug and myself and our two instruments. But right now I'm in the process of recording an album with strings, with cello and stand-up bass and drums. And I've been playing a lot lately with cello and violin. And I just love so many different instruments and how, and I've recorded with clarinet and lots of other instruments, because I think that all of them mimic different tones of the human voice in such unique ways. And so they all kind of have their own way of singing.
And what was it you found so special about Doug Cox, a Canadian that you met in Canada?
In Alaska, actually.
In Alaska. So what did you find between you that has formed this partnership that seems to be leading you into such satisfying directions?
Well, to be honest, Doug and I, when we met at this guitar camp, we were both instructors there. And part of it was that we both had this same extremely dry, dark sense of humor. And we became fast friends because of it. And the other thing that drew us together was that we loved so many of the same songwriters, and a lot of the other people who were either instructing or attending the camp weren't familiar with a lot of those songwriters. And that kind of inspired the whole recording process that we shared, was this desire to, at least to the people who were listening to us, to make these songs more known and to celebrate this rich history of songwriting that we love.
Well, I think you're both very lucky, don't you?
I do.
Has it led you into new paths? Some of the recording, some of the composing that you've done before you met Doug have now show the influence that he has had on you, and he would admit that similar things have happened in his world?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, I think it has, we both had a lot of experience on the road with other musicians, but our partnership has forged such a strong friendship, and I think personally we've pushed each other to grow as people. But musically, both of us have really challenged the other person to take our music in directions we haven't before. With Doug, he definitely turned that jazz sensibility around on me, because while I felt free to let people play what they were going to play and for me to sing what I was going to sing, that really heightened sensitivity on stage to what the other person is doing and really reading each other better. I think that grew so much in me while I've been working with him. And for Doug, I think his being restrained at times and ways that I've reined him in, or ways that, I hate to use that word phrase, reined him in, because it's not exactly appropriate, but we've both kind of directed each other, and I think we've both grown musically because of it.
You're going to be giving a workshop here on your visit to Little Rock. Has the workshop style that you and Doug now conduct changed from the one that you were working on when you met in Alaska?
Well, yes, because we didn't even know each other then. So when we met in Alaska, he was teaching dobro and several guitar techniques, and I was teaching a vocal workshop and a songwriting workshop. But now, as we've done workshops together over the past couple of years, we incorporate a lot of what we have learned working together. And so I think, you know, most musicians who are teaching workshops, or I guess any teacher, you know, it evolves over time because you're adding more recent experience and recent lessons.
So you would say you start with a basic framework, and then whatever comes up while you're teaching, while you're working with the participants in the workshop, sort of goes onto the frame, and eventually you can see what's coming out of it?
Yes, I'd say that's really accurate. We do start with a framework, and then, and you know, this has probably always been true. We always gauge where people are who are attending, see what their priorities are, why they're attending, and try to address those needs.
So when you come here to perform, you do the workshop, I think, the night before your actual performance. Will there be things possible that came out of that workshop that would have given a little idea in your mind that you might bring into the performance that you give on stage?
Oh, definitely. Whenever we're in a single place, and interacting with the same people more than once, you do, even if it's subconscious, you are influenced by what's around you, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are some inside jokes from Friday night carried over to Saturday night, or if there are ideas that get developed during the Friday night workshop that work their way into the performance.
So when you've come with a certain basic program that you will have to pick and choose from particular songs for that particular occasion. Will they be new songs that you've recently written that haven't even been recorded yet?
We might do some of that. We've been known to do that. And we'll probably do a good deal just from our albums as well, since we have two to draw from together. And then and both of us have several albums before that. But I wouldn't be surprised if we threw in a new song in there.
Just to test your own interests and imaginations.
Yeah, and for people who've already heard our albums, just to keep them interested in something new. And you know, everybody likes a challenge.
Betty Sue, the singer-songwriter, whose voice will be heard at Wildwood Park, and Canadian Doug Cox from Vancouver Island, British Columbia, will hold a free songwriting workshop Friday, October the 4th at 6:30 p.m. in the Stella Ballsmith Concert Hall at UALR. Hosted by the UALR Department of Music. The two musicians will close the Acoustic Music Festival the next evening. For the workshop, call UALR 501-569-3294 or Wildwood Park 501-821-8275. Tickets for the Saturday Festival order online at www.wildwoodpark.org.
Here's a look at what's happening at the arts in Arkansas. Wrapping up today at the Arkansas Rep, Pal Joey shows at 2 p.m. at the Arkansas Art Center's Children's Theater, Pinkalicious, the musical. There's a show today at 2, with performances continuing Friday at 7, Saturday at 2, and next Sunday at 2. In Fayetteville at the Walton Art Center, 4,000 Miles, a play by Amy Herzog. Performances today at 2 and 7, with shows Thursdays through Sundays through October 13th at the Nadine Baum Studios. The Cassatt String Quartet performs at several venues in Arkansas this week, at Garvin Gardens in Hot Springs Tuesday at 7 p.m., at the University of Central Arkansas in Conway on Thursday, 7:30 p.m., and at Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville at 6:30 p.m. on Friday. Thursday at Hendricks College in Conway, an evening with Murphy visiting poets C.D. Wright and Forrest Gander, 7:30 p.m. in Reeves Recital Hall. Opening Friday at Hot Springs Pocket Community Theater, A Streetcar Named Desire shows at 7:30 on Fridays and Saturdays and matinees on Sundays at 2 through October 13th. In Jonesboro, Arkansas State University Theater Department presents Dracula Friday at 7:30 p.m. and a midnight show on Saturday at Fowler Center. Shows continue through October 9th. The Fort Smith Symphony presents its 90th anniversary celebration this Saturday at 7:30 at Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center. Guest artist is pianist Alan Chow. And next Sunday, UALR's Artspree program presents guitarist Ravshan Mamdakuliev at 3 p.m. in Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall. On display around Little Rock, at the Arkansas Arts Center, Paul Signac Watercolors and Drawings, the James T. Dyke Collection. At Historic Arkansas Museum, Reflections from the Monday Studio Artists. At the Old State House Museum, Lights, Camera, Arkansas. And at the Arkansas Studies Institute, the Mid-Southern Watercolorist's 43rd Annual Juried Exhibition. And that's a look at the arts calendar for this week. For more on what's going on in Arkansas, visit our online calendar at ualrpublicradio.org.
The Chamber Music Society of Little Rock is celebrating its 60th anniversary and hosted a musicale September the 13th to launch the 2013-14 season. The organization is remarkable for the quality of the artists that it has brought into Little Rock and the zealous determination and support given to maintain the standards set from the start. It has depended in large part on board members and those who attend the concerts. Two board members are with me today. Brooke Malloy joined only recently, made aware of the society through last year's concert in the Clinton Center with violinist Rachel Barton Pine, and Joe Joyner, a violist with the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, drawn to the organization earlier and who is now part of the program committee, which plans each season's commitments. Have you had any input as to the choice of soloists and artists?
Yes. We did that last fall and early spring.
So as a violist, are you responsible for bringing in the violist?
I most certainly am.
You know her personally?
I do not. I was impressed by what I heard of her playing. There's Alessandro Rolla. She did a CD of his music. And Rolla was actually Paganini's violin teacher. And it's very virtuosic, early Italian classical music. And I listened to it and was very impressed.
So you've got this season lined up.
Mm-hmm.
Brooke, you've just joined recently. So what is your input? Are you responsible for some of the publicity materials that are going out?
Yes, I am.
But this is a special year. You're celebrating...
this is the 60th season of the Chamber Music Society of Little Rock.
Now, there's a change in the programming, isn't it?
It's November 21st.
So anyway, let's talk about the program you're bringing in this year. October the 3rd, the La Catrina String Quartet. What is the background of those, Joe?
They are a Mexican-American quartet. They are currently in residence at New Mexico State University. They last year won a Latin Grammy for a CD they did of music by Brazilian composer Francisco Mignon. I originally was interested in hiring them, one, because they've performed before for the Chamber Music Society, and it was a concert that I wasn't there, but the board members who were there really seemed to enjoy and have fond memories of, so we thought it would be good to at least bring one returning artist back this year, and so we chose them.
I hope you bring back that cellist you had last year. He
Sebastian.
Was great.
Yes. We've been talking to him. I think Gio Antipolo, our board member, still talks to him with some frequency.
Well, I gathered when that weekend just became one high party from what I was hearing from Jeff Robson and others.
Yeah.
And then the Stephen, well, they don't do like they do here with some of the Art Spree artists. You don't have any kind of master classes or something. They just come in for the concert and then leave. Is that right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Every artist that we bring in does an educational outreach activity. We have them visit local high schools. We've partnered with the Arkansas Symphony Youth Orchestras for Rachel Barton Pine last year. We had her come in and do a rock and improv violin workshop for some kids from the youth orchestra. This year, we're going to be partnering with the Faulkner Chamber Music Festival out of Conway, and we're going to do a master class with some student quartets from the camp, and then the Enzo String Quartet will be coaching them.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. So Stephen Lin, what is his background, the pianist that you're bringing in November?
He is Taiwanese-American. He's the 2012 winner of the Concert Artists Guild Victor Emila competition in New York. He is a Juilliard-trained pianist. He did the Juilliard Pre-College, was a two-time winner of their pre-college piano competition, and as a result got to play with the New York Philharmonic when he was 13.
Wow.
So he's a... prodigy, certainly.
And, so, though Taiwanese, he's been here most of his life.
Yes. And then he has his bachelor and master's degree from Juilliard, too.
You mentioned the Concert Artists Guild Award. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the agency you usually work through. Are they all concert artists?
Not all of our artists are from the Concert Artists Guild. We do get a number of our artists from them. They have very exceptionally talented musicians.
Are the Katrina Quartet, are they?
La Katrina is not a Concert Artist Guild. Stephen Lin and Jennifer Stum are both Concert Artist Guild artists.
And then you had a choice or a strong vote for the violist then for the February concert.
Yes, absolutely. As a viola player, I love viola recitals. There's a lot of great viola repertoire out there that rarely gets heard. And as far as I could tell, nobody could remember ever having a viola recital, so I thought this would be a great time to have one.
Well, they brought in, Conway brought in that wonderful viola.
Mm-hmm. Roberto Diaz,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, were you here then?
I did get to go to that. That was a very memorable evening.
I don't know if you know anything about the Little Rock Musical Coterie and the Federation of Music Clubs, but last year when they brought the artist who was the mm-hmm. winner in the particular category, her pianist was the one who'd come with Roberto Diaz.
Okay.
Yeah, very mm-hmm. fine pianist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who'd been with them for a long time, apparently. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that brings us to the last one, the Enzo Quartet, which means you sort of bracketed your two soloists with bookends of string quartets.
Correct, yes.
How, when you get two string quartets like that, and Enzo sounds familiar, but I don't know about them. Who are they?
They are currently based in New York City. I first met them in Houston when they were the graduate quartet in residence at Rice University.
Oh, okay.
And I had the good fortune to hear them perform a number of times in some interesting venues. I think I heard them play in a bar one time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just exceptionally talented. I think they met at Yale
mm-hmm.
In 1999. And they've been together ever since. And
yes, that is often the starting point for particularly string quartets, but mm-hmm. the number of ones that I've interviewed who are top of the tree. They've been together and maybe lost one in the going of the years between mm-hmm. them, which speaks well for music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then the audiences that you bring in, you've got a very faithful group of audiences. It's one of the oldest groups in town. Mm-hmm. How had you heard about them, Brooke? I feel that you would like to put a word in here and there, because obviously you've joined the Chamber Music Society because you love chamber music. Had you been to concerts just sort of listening and enjoying and then decided that, or did somebody proselytize you and bring you in?
Well, the Chamber Music Society of Little Rock really came to my attention last year when they brought in Rachel Barton Pine. Mm. And there was a concert at the Clinton Library, which is where this year's Enzo String Quartet's performance will be held.
And that's one of the venues that I think all the ensembles would like to play in. Because it attracts audience, for one thing. But it does have some kind of satisfying result when you play in it. Just the surroundings and mm-hmm. the feeling of being part of the salon type mm-hmm. of atmosphere that one likes to hear for chamber music.
For me, it's always the sunset. Getting to see the sunset go down over the city, I think, always makes for a great atmosphere for the concerts.
Or the storms. There have mm-hmm. been some dandy storms in that. And you've changed the venue. You're not at St. Mark's anymore.
This year we have moved to Trinity, United Methodist Church.
It's just across the street.
Just across the street. We had a conflict with one of our, I think it was the La Katrina concert. We were just kind of been talking about trying to find a new venue. The space we have been performing at St. Mark's was a nice space, but it presented problems in that there was no stage, mm-hmm. and so it was difficult for the audience to see performers.
So where will you be performing at Trinity? In the sanctuary?
It will be in the sanctuary, yeah. And they also have a nice piano.
So I'm glad that you're bringing us a viola soloist, because yeah. I love the viola. And
yeah,
there is
too.
A lot of music that one just doesn't hear if you don't have a soloist to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm not sure exactly what her program is, but I've looked over her sample programs that she has listed mm-hmm. on her website, and there's a lot of great stuff. So
now, the other thing that the chamber music has always done, are they still going to be able to do it, is to put the artists up in private homes?
We normally offer to put them up in homes. Some artists insist on staying in hotels, and we will do that if that's what they require.
Yeah.
But normally we put them up in the homes of our board members.
Joe Joyner and Brooke Malloy are board members of the Chamber Music Society of Little Rock, which brings in La Katrina Quartet to open the 2013-14 season on Thursday, October the 3rd, 7:30, in Trinity United Methodist Church in Little Rock. For tickets and more information, call 501-661-0520. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio.